I want you to picture the scene. You are one of Jesus' disciples, his inner crowd, the people he chose to teach so that they could be the pillars of the future. You're not James or John or Peter, you're one of the other nine. Now have a think, who do you want to be? Are you going to be Matthew, the tax collector? Andrew, the fisherman who was quite practical? Or Judas Iscariot? Or the other Judas? Or one of the other disciples who we know very little about, because we know God, Jesus chose them, but we don't know much else about them. So, I want you to imagine you're one of those. Now, the inner core, James, John, and Peter, had just been taken up into the hills around Caesarea Philippi and seen Jesus' glory when Moses and Elijah appeared with him. You know something wonderful had happened, but you don't know what, as the three are keeping quiet. If you remember, Jesus told them not to tell anyone what had happened. But these three are whispering together sometimes, or going off on their own quietly, looking very thoughtful. Or they may take Jesus aside sometimes when you're not close by to ask him something. Now, you're all on a journey with Jesus leading the way. You're going to Jerusalem, and the first slide will show us the map. Now, the big arrow at the top is Caesarea Philippi, which is where it all this journey started, and the bottom one is Jerusalem. In between, there are things we hear about in this account that happened at the top little red arrow, which is Capernaum, and the bottom little red arrow, which is Jericho. Now, it looks as if it's a downhill journey, but it wasn't. It was an uphill journey. There are lots of hills, and it wasn't a walk in the park. Now, how much do you think that distance is from Caesarea Philippi to Jerusalem? How much? 150 miles, that's slightly optimistic. It's more 90-ish. But that's as a crow flies, so maybe they had to do some detours. So how long would that have taken this band of 13 people with a lot of hangers-on as well? 2 weeks, at least. A long journey, and they went on foot. So it was a long, tedious journey to Jerusalem, getting ever closer to the destination where Jesus knew what was going to happen. So Jesus has said that Jerusalem's his destination, and it's a very long walk. There's lots of time on the walk for talking and even some arguing, meeting people, watching Jesus heal. And we read about these stories in the chapters of Matthew, if you want to read them when you go home, the chapters from chapter 16, verse 13, up until the end of this current chapter, chapter 20. What happened on that journey? We know, us here today, know that in 2 weeks' time, it will be Easter Day. Good Friday will have happened. The destination and the reason for the journey will have become clear, clearer to the 12, or a bit clearer. They still weren't completely understanding. Jesus is getting closer and closer to his death. Three times in these chapters from 16 to 20, he's told them that why he's going to Jerusalem is to be arrested and killed. And on the last occasion, he told them he was actually going to be crucified, die on a cross. So how are we thinking about this as we're journeying along? We're puzzled. We don't quite understand it. We're shocked. And we're talking a lot as Jesus leads us on. 2 weeks, lots of time for talk and thought. So we're still on the road. Us 12, Jesus and a whole lot of hangers-on. We pass through our hometowns, and as we go down the coast to the Sea of Galilee, We pass our own towns, our hometowns, our villages where we lived. What's happening now? It's Salome, James and John's mother. She's one of Jesus' followers. And a group of these followers are convinced that God's kingdom is about to start immediately appear when Jesus takes over in Jerusalem. They don't understand the implications of it. They think it's all going to happen and Jesus is going to bring in the new rule. And they're really excited. So, next slide, please, Dan. This is what happens. She asked Jesus a question. Now, if you were James and John, what would you think of your mum asking Jesus for special honours for you? Bit embarrassing, isn't it? James and John were young men, maybe still late teens, fishermen. They were proud men. They'd earned their living. But now, mum's got involved. And she's asking Jesus if we can sit on the left and the right when the kingdom comes, which is going to be very soon in Jerusalem. Will you give me your word that these two sons of mine be awarded the highest places of honor in your kingdom? One at the right and one at the left. Now, you, with your Matthew or Judas or whatever, what do you think? What a nerve. Why should they have the important places? But maybe James and John were egging their mother on. Maybe they were behind her asking the question because they had been with Jesus and Peter on seeing the transfiguration, and they'd heard Jesus say to Peter, "You're going to be my rock, the person on whom I'm going to build my new organization, the church." And they thought, oh, we don't want him to have the most important place. Come on, we want to get in there, lads. Let's ask now if we can have the best places. So, next slide, please. Yeah, now the seats of honor were always on the right and left. And this is Leonardo da Vinci's picture of the Last Supper. And they wouldn't have had seats like we have. They would usually have sit on the ground or cushions or something like that. But it would be the two people either side of the main host, the guest of honor, who would be the most important people. And that's what they wanted. Anyway, we got really cheesed off with these two, James and John. So we ganged up against them and started having a go at them. Who do you think you are? We're just as important as you are to Jesus. We sort out our bed and breakfast arrangements on the road. Judas is the treasurer. He sorts out the money. Who organizes the food and gets the cooking organized? We do. We're just as important as you and Peter, James and John. You may have had extra revelations, but we're just as important. Does it remind you a bit of the story of Martha and Mary? I think the 10 felt that they were the Marthas, and James and John and Peter were the Mary, but they were also important. So what does Jesus do? He calls us together to gather around him, as he periodically did as we journeyed, and he gives us another lesson, which we'll look at in a minute. I really love this story. It's so human, so real. And there's also a warning here I think we need to take on about being a pushy parent. Of course we want the best for our children and our adult children. These young men, their mother wanted the best for them, and she could see they'd got a good career ahead of them if they were Jesus' right-hand people. But there is a temptation for us to try to fulfill our dreams through our children, the things we wish we could have done through them, and push them into careers or maybe even relationships which are not right for them. I know one young man whose parents insisted, and he was prepared to be controlled by them, that he should study medicine. He did, he qualified, but he hated it and he was not cut out for it and it ruined his life. So do be careful what we wish for our children. Support them, but don't be pushy. So, how did Jesus answer this request? He said, "You have no idea what you're asking." And he said to James and John, "Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink?" They said, "Yeah, sure, why not?" Jesus said, "Come to think of it, you are going to drink my cup. But as to awarding places of honor, that's not my business. My Father is taking care of that." So Jesus was going to explain a lot about what that cup meant. But the rest of us, we missed that bit of the argument because we were so cross with these two. So Jesus said to them, "You've observed how godless rulers throw their weight around, how quickly a little power goes to their heads." Now, I don't know whether you listened to the news yesterday, but I did. And there was a report about the builders, Persimmon, who build a lot of new houses. Now, they are about to start an investigation into themselves because they've had so many complaints about the shoddy workmanship of their houses. Apparently, one owner of a brand new house has reported 700 faults with it. But guess what? The chief executive officer of Persimmon has just been awarded a bonus. Guess how much? Pardon? Millions. £100 million bonus. So he's looked up to because he's an important person, he's in charge of a big firm. The fact that the firm are not doing their job properly seems irrelevant. He's got £100 million bonus. Hopefully he'll get the sack. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But that doesn't look good, does it? So who do we look up to in the world? Politicians?
No.
No. Sports stars? We do look up to some of those, don't we? People we see on the telly, good actors, good actresses. That's what the world looks at. And Jesus is now going on to talk about what it means to be a servant. But before we look at that, just look at what the cup is all about. Because I found this story quite difficult to understand over the years. Because, I didn't understand about the cup and why shouldn't they? They weren't going to be crucified like Jesus. So what was he talking about? So in the Old Testament, the word cup is used as a cup of blessing or it could be a cup of judgment. The cup is something that in Psalm 23, my cup runs over. My cup of blessings are so many, they're just running over. But in Mark, there's another word as well as, can you drink of the cup that I'm going to drink? It says, can you drink of the cup I'm going to drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm going to be baptized with? And they said, sure, why not? Now, to be baptized, we know what it means for Baptists, but the root of the verb is that it means to be dipped or submerged. It doesn't necessarily involve water. You may use the expression submerged in grief. Yeah, we can use it in that phrase. So maybe Jesus is talking about being overcome by sorrow and bitterness and grief. So Jesus is telling them that persecution and death are going to be theirs. These two, James and John, have invited themselves to a place quite different from the one they and their mother were contemplating. This cup is not the cup of blessing, but of judgment and death. Let's have the next slide. It's a bit dark, you can't see it very well, but do you know where that is? Buckingham Palace. The throne room in Buckingham Palace, very grand, two thrones for the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh. But that's the kind of thing James and John were originally thinking of. Jesus is going to be ruling, he's going to be sitting on the throne, up on a bit of a platform, and we want to have thrones either side of him. Because Jesus had earlier said that the 12 disciples would be on thrones in heaven, governing the 12 tribes of Israel in the new kingdom. So this is what they were thought was going to happen. So James and John thought the cup and baptism would be wonderful. Jesus knew it meant pain, sacrifice, and death. And these are what he promises to share with these two. They wanted a crown to sit on a throne. They were promised a cross. So it's interesting, isn't it, that the two people who were on Jesus' left and right when he reached the end of his human life, next one please, and became fully God again, were not two of his disciples, but two thieves. I think that's a bit of an irony, isn't it? Two people who had been condemned, because being crucified meant you had been condemned by a court, that these thieves had been condemned to death, held up to ridicule. Everyone could see what them, but they were either side of Jesus, and he gave them grace and mercy when one of them asked for it. So how are we to respond to this? How does the kingdom of God work? Do we seek a crown or a cross? So what does having a crown signify? It means there's a kingship, there's rule, reserved seats, special seats, high status, glory for ourselves, authority, power. You can lord it over others, ambition. And rather than serving others, you can ask others to serve you. And it means going first. No one would dare walk in front of the Queen in a procession, would they? Pardon?
Donald Trump,
yeah. Okay, Donald Trump. Well, he thinks he's God, doesn't he? Anyway, you know, the Queen is important. We would go behind her. I've actually, this is just a little aside, the Queen had to visit my sister's house once, long story. But they had to prepare a toilet that she might want to use. She didn't. But it had been newly painted. And on the floor of the toilet, a bit of paint had been spilt. There were some spots of paint on the floor. And who was asked to get these spots of paint off the night before on my hands and knees? Yeah, you can't have a toilet for the Queen with spots of paint on the floor. It's got to be perfect. She didn't use it. But I did it anyway. So that's what a crown signifies, importance. What does a cross signify? The lowest status. A condemned person. Pain, burden. And we have come to think of it as being a slave to God. We take up our cross, we serve others, going last, not first. And when we are, it talks about us being a slave, in the slave industry, you were bought by somebody, so you did whatever that person asked you to do. You did whatever they wanted to do. But if they told you to serve somebody else, that was part of your being a slave. So when Jesus asks us to serve others, it's because we're bonded to him, we're his slaves as Christians, that we serve others. Next slide. Okay, you can't see that too well either, but this is a cross. But round the top of the cross is the crown of thorns. So it's a bit ironic, isn't it, that Jesus actually did have a cross and a crown when he came to the end of his life. But his crown was a painful one, jammed down on his head with thorns. So what is our motivation for doing things day by day? Is it for our own glory, to be noticed, to have the limelight, or is it to serve Jesus? God honours service rather than power. How do we do that? It is to deliberately, consciously, and daily commit to following Jesus and being ready to go where he leads. We have the temptation too, as Christians in church life, to look for crowns. There's ambition in church life. To be noticed, to be praised for doing things. Yeah, we need to thank people for what they do. But as with James and John, their desire to be great was very selfish, and it led to a lot of dissension and division amongst the disciples, and Jesus had to sort that out. Compared with Jesus, who modeled it perfectly, his service and sacrifice was perfect. He didn't put a foot wrong. Now, we do put feet wrong. We make a mess of it. We're not perfect yet. But we have to choose to follow Jesus, or we follow the world's way. Which way are we going to go? To follow God or the world? Now, that picture on there with that cross, I took it just over a week ago in a Baptist church in Reading, where I went for a funeral. And it was in the front of the church, obviously part of their building up to Easter symbol. The person who died was age 94. When you're that old, you don't expect many people to come to your funeral, unless you've had 100 children. This lady had not had no children at all. But the church was packed. There were over 300 people there. Two-thirds of them were aged 50 and under. And two-thirds of them were not white British in ethnicity. This lady had been born in China, where her parents were missionaries. During her teenage years, it was fraught with problems. She was on her way back to boarding school on one occasion, and the boat that she and her brother were on was hijacked by pirates, and they were held hostage for 4 days until the British plane came and relieved them. She could have been killed. Later on in her teenage years, when Japan entered the war on the side of Germany, the school she was in was captured, and she and everyone in the school, plus a lot of other people, were taken to a Japanese prisoner of war camp where they were kept for 4 years. And there's a book been written about how the Girl Guides won the war, and about how that kind of organization kept everyone's spirits up. Well, in the prisoner of war camp, she set up a Girl Guide troop. And so she's mentioned in the book as one of the Girl Guides who helped win the war and keep people's spirits up. Interestingly, while she was in that prisoner of war camp, she was taught chemistry by Eric Liddell, the famous runner, Christian runner. After she left there, she trained as a teacher and decided that God was calling her to be a missionary too. By this time, she had a husband, and they were called to the Philippines, where they served, building camps, helping young people, pioneering churches, planting churches, until the 1980s. And then you'd think it came home for a well-deserved rest. No. They got involved with an organization called International Friends, or Friends International, which supports students from abroad who come to the UK to study in universities. And she and her husband had a great ministry welcoming these students. Sometimes they lived in their home, and they were, lot of them had no knowledge of Christianity at all. And through the life that this lady lived with her husband, they got to know what Christianity was about. At the funeral, after the funeral, we had the most enormous sit-down meal. Most of it was foreign food produced by a lot of these people, and it was great. I was sharing a table with a couple. He was British, she was Vietnamese. She had come as a student, and she was a Buddhist when she arrived in Reading. And she had some good discussions with this couple. And the thing she told me that really struck her was when Margaret said, "Buddha died for himself. Jesus died for everyone else." And that got her thinking. And she was converted. And then her husband was converted. And they are now serving God in a city in the north of the UK. But it was, and I've never been to a funeral where the guy leading the funeral says, "Does anybody else want to say anything?" Brilliant idea. And five people got up to speak about the effect that this lady had had on their lives. And the last one to speak was a current student who had become a Christian last year through their ministry. And the strapline for this funeral was, "A life lived well, investing in others." So right until she had a stroke in February this year, her house was filled with international students because she wanted to share God's good news with them. Our life of service as Christians never stops, not until we die. So let's make sure that we are serving others in the name of Jesus. It doesn't matter what we do. The important thing is that we do it and do what God is leading us to do. I'm going to read that story again from the New Living Version, just to remind us what it's all about. "Then the mother of James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus with her sons. She knelt respectfully to ask a favor. 'What is your request?' he asked. She replied, 'In your kingdom, will you let my two sons sit in places of honor next to you, one at your right and the other at your left?' But Jesus told them, 'You don't know what you are asking. Are you able to drink from the bitter cup of sorrow I am about to drink?' 'Oh yes,' they replied, 'we are able.' 'You will indeed drink from it,' he told them. 'But I have no right to say who will sit on thrones next to mine. My Father has prepared those places for the ones he has chosen.' When the 10 other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. But Jesus called them together and said, 'You know that in this world, kings are tyrants and officials lorded over the people beneath them. But among you, it should be quite different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must become your slave. For even I, the Son of Man, came here not to be served, but to serve others and to give my life as a ransom for many.'" Let's pray. Father, thank you that Jesus was prepared to choose the cross so that he could die and be our ransom. He died in our place. And Father, as a result of that incredible sacrifice, we want to follow him and for him to be the king of our lives. Father, will you help us to serve you in the way that Jesus asks us to, so that we can bring in your new kingdom in this place. And Father, if all this is strange to some of us because we haven't really thought about what being a Christian's about, will you open our hearts and our minds to see this Easter time, how great you are, and how the resurrection of Jesus has changed the history of the world forever. Thank you for it. Amen.